Well, I want to talk with you about kind of a strange topic, surprising in one way, and I think deeply important in another. And that is, why don't Christians believe in the Bible? Or believe the Bible, I would say. Why don't Christians believe what the Bible says? And when you consider that there may be as many as 2 billion Christians on the planet Earth, wouldn't it be wonderful if all of us who identify with this teaching love God with all our heart, mind, and soul, our neighbor as ourselves, our enemies, love our enemies? Strange. Wouldn't that be a wonderful world if we had this simple teaching, which the Master said is the whole law, and which Casey reiterates hundreds of times. It all boils down to this. Love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, your neighbor as yourself. Love your enemies. Well, I must have come in with kind of a love for the Bible. I don't know what my past lives were, but I just remember as a kid enjoying going to church. When I was about 12, I had a paper route. My dad would wake me up on Sunday mornings. I had to rush in. The little town of Wellington, about 4,000, was around the city square or town square. And back in the alley, there was a bakery open. I'd go and get a roll with apricot or pineapple jelly. And then the woman that had charge of the Fort Worth Star-Telegram that I delivered, she ran a flower shop, and so I would pick up the papers that had been dropped off, go in the flower shop, fold them, smell this wonderful. Then, just a square mile, that's the whole town, and I would rush to finish and get back. And I enjoyed those times. And in more recent years, like 4 or 5 years ago, I loved getting up. I get up about 7, shower, make breakfast, and then at 7:30 to 8, I would listen to Joel Osteen, and then go on over to the center. Well, you know, Joel always closes his sermons with a prayer, and he says, "Friends, if you said this prayer, we believe you got born again. Get into a good Bible-based church and put God first place in your life." Well, I'm with him on this one. Put God first place in your life. But when he talks about the Bible-based church, I think of this as the most Bible-based church I know of. Because certainly the Bible-based church that I was in when I was 12 years old, doesn't have anything to do with the Bible basics that I understand now. And yet, you know, when I got out of Baylor, 47, 48, there was a big Youth for Christ movement. And a couple of years ago, I went online and I find that a lot of those leaders, many of them I knew in that movement, they had a 50-year anniversary meeting, and they're still teaching the same thing. They're still with that. And you know, I praised the Lord, and I cried, and I had my emotional response to this story hasn't changed since I was a kid, but certainly my understanding of it has changed dramatically. So the question is, why don't Christians believe the Bible? When we talk about the Bible, you may think, oh, he's going back 100 years. I'd like to think I'm going forward 100 years. Because for many of us, especially in the metaphysical field, it's kind of become passé. What I've discovered talking with Casey Ornid people around the country is they believe this Jesus story, but they're not students of the Bible so much. They moved on to more metaphysical things. But the whole thing is anchored in this. This is the roots of it. This is the origin. But it's an origin of something that came to be known as monotheism. Now, I like the mono part, the oneness. But theism, what is theism? Theism is the idea that God created the manifest universe and sort of stepped back. He's not a part of it. He put it into motion in terms of universal laws or natural laws. And then, because he established these natural laws, for him to have any effect, like an answer to prayer, he may have to put aside those natural laws, and thus we have the expression divine intervention. For there to be a miracle, you have to have divine intervention. Well, this monotheistic idea of theism puts God outside of us and outside of humankind, and puts us in a strange bind to wonder, how can God work in our lives? And the only way he can intervene, as it were, like in an answer to prayer, is go somehow contrary to natural law. Well, this story is complicated further by the development of what's called the scientific worldview. And the scientific worldview, it's easy to trace the history of this, and even in the 1800s, it's developing, where some bright students are saying this idea of an élan vital, a life force, we don't really need that. We can explain it all by natural law. For example, Francis Crick, who developed the helix idea of DNA, has written a book, The Astounding Hypothesis, which is that there is no soul, there's only natural law. Now, atheism is a response to theism, and I have a lot of sympathy with that, because the problem of theism that puts God outside of us. So once you develop this monotheistic view, Jews, Christians, Muslims, all three, I heard someone on television recently talking about Jerusalem, said this is where all three monotheistic, this is the most holy place for all three monotheistic religions. To believe in theism, that God is out there, leads us then, in terms of thinking about our lives, to go along with the scientific, so-called scientific. There's nothing scientific about it. It's just a philosophical assumption. Some of these brilliant minds just said, let's assume that there is no extra life force, everything just goes according to natural law. Well, that's where most Christians are. You see, we are so engulfed in this notion of the scientific worldview, which, again, it's anti-scientific because it really puts a box around teachings. The dramatic example of this, and I've understood this since 1947 when I read about the research in parapsychology. The findings of parapsychology are impossible in the scientific worldview and disregarded or found heretical in Christian theology. We have here something that tells us something about our spiritual nature. Imagine clairvoyance, telepathy, talking with the dead. And then, of course, the big one, reincarnation. So why these teachings? One of the answers that Casey gives us is the desire to take shortcuts. So the desire to take shortcuts. Remember, In the Reincarnation book, we have a quote from St. Augustine. Let's say 400 AD, one of the great leaders and teachers of the Catholic Church. And he says, even if reincarnation were so, better that we not even entertain it. Better that we think of that we are going to die and go directly to heaven instead of the notion that we might have to come back again and again. So this resistance to the reincarnation teaching is exactly so fully articulated by Augustine, exactly the illustration of the desire to take shortcuts. Now, when you read the Casey material, and I've seen it, once I start looking, I see it all over the place, it keeps talking about eternity. We are building for eternity. We're not just building in this life so that we can go to heaven and not go to hell. That we are on a path that will require us again and again and again to put self aside, to embrace our oneness with God, to move toward that oneness and harmony that was our original state. So the Christian theology is that God created the manifest universe out of nothing. Now, that's not biblical. There's nothing in the Bible that would say that. The Christian theology says that God is three persons. There's nothing in the Bible that supports a Trinity. What Casey says is, because we're in three dimensions, we can work effectively with three-dimensional concepts. And so, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, he says, those are aspects of ourselves, that they're related to the dimensions of time, space, and patience. We're in a three-dimensional world. We have three-dimensional concepts. So the mono part, I was saying, is right. There's only one God. But according to this information, there's only one force. There is only God. So in the Jewish tradition, the great Shema, know, O Israel, the Lord thy God is one God, and there is nothing other. So I've shared this with you before. The word there in the Shema is Ein, E-I-N. And it can be properly translated none or nothing. Know, O Israel, the Lord thy God is one God, and there is nothing other, or not another one. So the monotheists interpret it as there's not another God. But an equally and more preferable translation would be there's nothing other than God. So the oneness of all force. And the oneness of all force makes it more clear that we are all participants in the divine. So why Christians don't believe the Bible? Well, for one thing, we have the teaching, what you sow is what you'll reap. There's no way that works without reincarnation. And Jesus, on at least a dozen times, teaches this law. With what measure you meet, it'll be measured. Now, Christians don't believe that because that doesn't play out in our real lives with only one incarnation. Jesus said, the works that I do, you can do and greater. Who of us believes that? Not many Christians, because he's God and we're just creatures. So we don't claim that promise of the attuning to the divine and manifesting the fullness of the Spirit of Christ that the man Jesus manifested. Christians teach, believe in Jesus and you'll be saved. Well, he didn't teach that. He said, and this is not a favorite passage for most of us, but he said, they'll be divided into sheep and goats. And some of the goats will say, didn't we heal in your name? And he says, I never knew you. So Christians may teach, believe in Jesus and you'll be saved. But he says, a lot of people say, Lord, Lord, and he never knew them. So that's another. The very thing that we are told that we are God beings. In the book of, one of the books of, John's letters. He says, isn't it glorious that we have been told that we are children of God? And the psalmist says, children of the Most High. Now, why don't Christians believe that we are God beings? Well, first they say Adam and Eve eating of the tree to make them wise, to make them as gods, and they call that the original sin. That wanting to be as a god is one of the worst things. And yet, Jesus says, doesn't your own law say you are God's children, the Most High? Why don't Christians believe the Bible when it says you are God's children, the Most High? And when they accused Jesus of blasphemy, he quotes this from the Psalms. Doesn't your own law say you are God's? Why don't Christians believe this? The whole monotheistic theology works against us believing that in the Bible. The Sermon on the Mount, it's filled with extraordinary challenges that I have found that most Christians think that the Sermon on the Mount is the greatest sermon ever preached, and following it is optional. We don't have to really take it that serious because it challenges us so many ways. That's one of the places we were taught, love your enemies. Jesus said, call no man on earth your father. And yet, a billion Christians call God, call priests father. Why does he say, call no man on earth father? And in Jesus and then in the Apostle Paul, we are told, Abba, pray to Abba. Abba meaning papa, daddy. It suggests more than just a relationship. It's a loving relationship. Why not call the priest father? We have only one father. Why don't Christians believe this and get it clear? That we are children of the Most High. He is our Father, and we can have a loving relationship with Him. Now, what Casey says is God is not a person, because that's the oneness of all force. And unless we get clear about this oneness of all force, we don't have any reverence, say, for this planet. We don't have any reverence for life forms. We don't have... Just think of what Christianity has done to, well, in slavery or in the way that Native Americans were treated or in the way imperialistic businesses take advantage of the raw materials of other countries and drive them into poverty. So the calling him Abba, Father, beloved, establish a kind of relationship that is biblical, but not featured so much in Christianity. One of the major teachings of Jesus was, be not afraid. And yet, we had two of the best Christians we know. Well, I remember it was around the turn of the century, 2000-2001. These two beautiful people would come with their fanny packs, with their revolver, concealed weapon, right on their second center, you know. Be not afraid. Why don't Christians believe these teachings? If you live by the sword, you will die by the sword. If you are counting on a gun for your protection instead of the Lord... You know, I've told you several times about my friend who made regular trips down to Central America to be with an Indian tribe. And once he thought, you know, I ought to take some self-defense. And he took some lessons and then went down there and he got mugged for the first time. Why don't we believe, as we learn from Job, that you fear comes upon you? See, if I think I'd better carry a weapon, there's only one reason you do that, because you're afraid. And the Bible tells us, be not afraid. And I really believe, especially the 91st Psalm, he who dwells in the secret place of the Most High, which I think is centered in meditation, will abide under the shadow of the Almighty. Casey warns, be careful that you don't get out from under the shadow. Abide under the shadow of the Almighty. And it says, 1,000 shall fall at your side and 10,000 at your right hand, but it will not come nigh thee. See, that's the Bible. That's the teaching about how we should deal with some things with which people are fearful. Say 15 years ago, a previous pope put out a warning that against meditation. And I think they specifically were talking about transcendental meditation, what they identified with Eastern Hinduism. But the churches actually warned us against meditation. It's amazing to me, just this year, we see it on ABC, Good Morning America. One of the anchors there is teaching meditation. He's going around. So they're talking about meditation now on television, but maybe not so much in the church, which is unfortunate. Psalm 1 says, blessed is he who meditates day and night on the law of the Lord, and he shall be prosperous in everything. So what are the motives for our beliefs? I think a major one is taking a shortcut. There are other motives. There's something about Christians of wanting an exclusivism. And the psychology of exclusivism is fascinating. I got some insights once. I saw a television report of some lottery winners. And ones that had won a million or less kind of wound up in one group, and those that had won 100 million or something, another. And those that had won the bigger lottery looked down on kind of, they separated and kind of pulled away. What is that about? It's just something in us that wants to feel a little better than or a little more exclusive. And that is absolutely contrary. Although we talk about American exceptionalism, and part of that is the Christian religion as exceptionalism, is completely contrary to this book that says everyone is a neighbor. Why we should believe in the Bible? Well, the biggest thing for me, and I get excited about it every time I think about it, some of the teachings that Jesus had said, mainly it relates to eat of my flesh and drink my blood. And those around him said, this is a hard saying. And many left them. And then he looked at the 12 and said, will you too leave me? And Peter said, where should we go? For you have the words of life. So that's my question. Where shall you go for the words of life? Where? Yes, it's passé. Yes, it's strange that so many, I think so much of Christian teaching has turned a lot of people against the Bible instead of for it because of that narrowness and the bigotry and prejudice that we all bring to it. But where, ask yourself seriously, where can I turn for the words of life? Where can I find this, if not in this place? One of the reasons we need to understand this book more fully is what our capabilities are, what our soul potentials are. Casey says that all of us have had incarnations in which we've been very advanced and we've built for ourselves gifts that we need to claim if we will remember where we put them. If we'll awaken the soul, it is the soul is vast and beautiful and holy and powerful beyond our imagination because we've put ourselves in this box. And so we need to say with Jesus, you are gods. I am a God being. not God, but a beingness, a God being in the beingness of God. So why don't Christians believe this? It is in Him that we move and live and have our being. We are in the beingness. We are God beings in the beingness of God. One of the things that Christians don't believe about the Bible is, and this whole idea of original sin is problematic, but we have an explanation in the Bible about how we got into trouble. This book says, all we, like sheep, have gone astray. And the reincarnation idea is the only way we can really understand how we've gone astray. And once we get that clear, then we see that we must take personal responsibility to find our way forward and out. Another thing that is not clear at all in Christian theology is the importance of the body. The idea, and this is really, really big, we need to understand something about archetypes. In the Old Testament, extraordinary detail was given about how to build the tabernacle, how to furnish it, what the drapes or the veils should be, this lampstand with seven lamps and the Ark of the Covenant and so on. Now, in Exodus, Moses is told, "See thou build it according to the pattern given thee on the mount," the pattern. Now, in Hebrews, we're told, don't you know that the body is the temple and that the tabernacle was only a pattern of the true? God has not entered into things made by man with hands, but into this tabernacle, which is the temple of the living God. So once we see that the Old Testament tabernacle was a pattern for the physical body, then we have a biblical understanding of what archetypes are about. That here is an archetypal pattern. You see, the idea of an archetype, it carries powerful charismatic energies. And once we see that this was a place built for the purpose of meeting God face to face, and then we stand, but it's the body. This is the temple. This is where we are to meet God face to face. And without referring to this principle from the Bible, we have Christians not understanding how this body, this is such a temple. This is the place that we should approach with great holiness to find that God beingness within ourselves and to awaken that. So, the Apostle Paul says, "It's been revealed to me a mystery not known from the foundation of the world," which is this mystery, Christ in you. But how do we come to be one with that Christ in you? Meditation and application. We need to attune and apply. That's what being a channel is. Attune to the Spirit of God within us and give manifestation of that toward our fellow man. And the Gospel of John especially, Casey was asked, "What is the best book on psychology that I can read?" He said, "The book of John, the Gospel of John, because that is the psychology of life." So the whole idea of approaching this glorious gospel, which is the most mystical of them, the Gospel of John, the psychology of life. This is the way to come to understand ourselves and others and what the meaning of life is. And then the revelation. Casey says, if you really want to analyze, psychoanalyze yourself and others, study the revelation with the body in mind, that all of those symbols are archetypal symbols of processes that we're told about, and the in the tabernacle worship, if you look at what in Exodus they're told of the processes for worship and sacrifice, and see that as instructions about meditation. So there was a laver and an altar. You cleanse yourself, you sacrifice those things that are in the way, and then go into the holy place, and then to the holy, holy of holies, which is within ourselves. And with that, it's in the Bible, but it's not a part of the Christianity that we have understood. So this oneness of all force gives us a sense of reverence for life, reverence for all beings, an understanding of the purpose of all of creation, and that we're participants in this instead of that it is something apart, that we are so different from. And unless we have this, then we ravage the earth, we exploit the earth, we exploit actually the monotheistic worldview really is an exploitative worldview. It sets up for exploitation of others because we don't see God in everyone and everything. Another fascinating thing that we can gain from this Bible is to learn something about our own personal history. Many of the people that got life readings from Casey were told they had had experiences during the times of Jesus. They were, and what Casey is telling us is, if we remember those are soul achievements that we should awaken for ourselves and understand better. Some of us have memories of those times. Some have memories of, let's say, wandering in the wilderness. You see, these experiences are potentially gems for us if we will begin to allow ourselves. And Casey says, you know, like Jesus saying to Peter, you can walk on the water. Casey says, remembering these past lives shouldn't be that difficult. It's just right there. That's a part of who we are at the present. So Christians don't believe in the Bible mainly because of monotheism, putting God at a distance instead of seeing God in and through and part of everything. Now, why should we believe in the Bible? These are the words of life. This is mental and spiritual food. We need to feed our bodies. We need to feed our souls. And Casey makes a differentiation between digestion and assimilation. And he says, you can digest food, but you may not assimilate it. And what I think a lot of times happens here is there's a certain kind of digestion about these words, but not really an assimilation. We don't think about it. Casey encourages us to mull over these things, to wonder about them. Here's just one example. You know that they took Jesus to the Roman curate because the Jews couldn't put anyone to death, right? That he had to go to the Roman authority to put some to death. And yet, in the book of Acts, we're told that the Apostle Paul put many to death. The writings of Paul, which precede the Gospels and all the other New Testament writings by 20 or 30 years, Paul never addresses that. You see, it didn't happen. And if you then begin to look more at Luke and the Acts of the Apostles and what Paul wrote in person 20 or 30 years earlier, there's a discrepancy there. We haven't assimilated this. We've read about it, but because it's John, Acts, Romans, then we read in that order, and yet these letters from the Apostle Paul precede those writings and are completely contrary to them. And what Paul said was that he met with and was taught by the resurrected Jesus, just the way in which, after the crucifixion, the resurrected Jesus appeared to the 12. He says, I was born out of season, but I was the 13th one, and I met this same resurrected Jesus. Now, what do Christians tell us about the resurrection? Something very strange. But there are two things about it. One aspect of resurrection is the continued growth, spiritual growth, in subsequent incarnation. And then, Casey actually says, we should look for the resurrection of our own bodies in the sense that Jesus did, that he after the crucifixion, he could remanifest in the physical body and then move out. And this is a promise for us all from the clarity about the Bible and from the Casey readings. What is that about? Well, we're told flesh cannot inherit heaven. And for us, see, I keep coming across in Casey the word eternal. We're building for eternity. We're not building just for this life and then to die and go to heaven or hell. We're building and building and building and building. How close are we to being able to do the things that Jesus did? How close are we to being able to pray for someone like Lazarus and say, Lazarus, come forth? And so we have so much growth to do. Casey says there's growth in it's more than 50% for every incarnation. Even if we have a lot of problems, there's soul growth. Why is that? Because the force at work in the universe is God's love. And so there's always growth forward. So what I want you to do is rethink this. Casey doesn't recommend it all, so to speak. I frankly believe that some of the Casey material is more inspired than some of the biblical stuff. What do we learn from Habakkuk or Zephaniah or Zechariah or some of these so-called minor prophets? Do not have nearly the clarity, the inspiration, the accuracy and helpfulness that we find in the Casey readings. I was talking with Harmon Bro once. He said, Herb, you talk about the readings as though they were the Bible. And I said, yes, of course. When we say the Bible is divinely inspired, what Casey says is all souls are psychic. That psychic is of the soul, and that just as he could make the attunement, or just as, let's say, Isaiah could make an attunement, or Moses and Jesus, then we could have a Casey who could make that kind of attunement. And it's so the idea is to look for sacred literatures that call you and call your spirit out and answer to you. And I submit that since many of us have had incarnations in these times, that this book will awaken some of that spirit. I mentioned Harmon Bro. I was giving a talk one night, and he came up afterwards, and he says, Herb, I know exactly what the Old Testament priests look like. You were dressed like that. You had the headpiece, the breastplate, all of that. And so what potentially can enrich me if I claim those growth periods that I've had in my life. And so for an enrichment of understanding this, I think most of us in this room have probably had incarnations that related to these time periods. And as we study this, we may more likely remember who we are and what we're about. Thank you.